Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Mavro and Austin Underground. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking. Get those questions in, and obviously we're going to get to those here in just a little bit. Guys, we're 72 days away from kickoff, the number slowly but surely ticking down. And to pass the time, there's a lot of recruiting information going on.
Wait, who's the best 72 ever at Texas for the chat? Who's the best 72?
I think about that one.
I don't know that answer.
Hey, we missed 73 yesterday with Sean Rogers, by the way.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We've had him on the show. Yeah.
The 73.
That's about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously a big recruiting week for the Longhorns, a couple of midweek official visitors. Jerry, what's the latest there with those as those visits get close to being wrapped up?
Yeah, close to being wrapped up. But all these guys leaving this from these midweek visits, that's Dejon Lee, Dorian Brew, Nathan Tillman, scheduled to make another official visit in their official visit process. Nathan Tillman scheduled to be at TCU. Dorian Brew, Ohio State, where his mom's in the Track Hall of Fame. And then Dejon Lee heads to Alabama before June 28th decision. We think a lot of these guys look, a lot of the floodgates are going to open on commitments coming up here early July. Dejon Lee may be one of those first guys off the board June 28th. I just think that a lot of decisions are going to be made first 10, 12 days of July. So it's going to be a fun run. But all three of those guys, you know, we're hearing all the positive things. Look, Texas doesn't have, they know what they're doing. There's not bad official visits here. The question here is, it's different. Like, Texas coming way from behind on Dejon Lee. How much ground can they make up on Georgia and Alabama? Alabama's got a little something going right now, by the way. I think they got their NIL geared up, Bobby, a little bit more. But then, with Dorian Brew, you know, Texas was in a pretty good spot. They'd fallen off. We'll see how much ground they actually make up. It's been through the same official visit process that we report on, a lot of the positional meetings, a lot of time spent with Steve Sarkisian, families, obviously, with the Texas staff, dinners, what have you, everything about the university to the football program, watching the summer workouts, all that stuff. All the same things that are going on the weekend official visits are happened is these last 2 days for the three midweek official visitors. So all recruitments that I think Texas is working from behind on entering the week. We'll see where things come out. Now with Nathan Tillman, we say working from behind because they were most recent offer and he's committed to SMU. So I think Texas has a real shot there, and we'll see what happens with the corners.
I think it's important we realize that not only are they finishing this up, they're also heading into the next weekend.
That's right.
Of official visits. So there's 18 guys coming. That even actually starts tonight, right, Jerry? I mean, aren't KJ Lacy and Jamie French getting in late this evening after being out at the Elite 11 out in California earlier today?
Yeah, possible, like 2 a.m. They'll be in on the red eye flights, I think. So that'll be late nights for those guys. Coming in from Elite 11. But, yeah, there's the big official visit weekend on tap. I think we have a good graphic of that, Blake. It's going to be a big visit weekend ahead. Number of commitments in. Obviously, KJ Lacy, James Simon, Devin Jordan Coleman. Also, the third triplet, Isaiah Coleman, will be in as well. Preferred walk-on D lineman. Elijah Barnes, two tremendous linebacker prospects this weekend. Those are the midweek visitors. Elijah Barnes and Madden Faramo. But we talked last night, Bobby. I broke out Nick Townsend's video for Rod Babers. We talked about why that's such a huge official visit for Texas this weekend. Nick Townsend, because he's not a premium position player. He doesn't get as much attention nationally as the premium position players. But at his position, he may be just as good of a prospect as anybody.
I think he's phenomenal. I say that knowing that he's not 6'6", 275. He's that, you know, he's a Bo Scaife type of tight end, Jerry. He's a little undersized maybe for what you want at the pro level. At the same time, he's very athletic, and he's absolutely a football player first. That is what I like about Nick Townsend. Then you know he has, at 235 pounds, he has sub-11 flat speed. That's not normal, right? I mean, I know that people want to think, oh, well, he's why isn't he running a 10.6 at 200? People don't run 10.9 at 235 pounds. It's just not done, you know, and especially not in high school. And so I think that Nick Towns has a lot of football left ahead of him. It looks like it's come down to Texas and Alabama for him, Jerry. And I'd love to know, you know, where things stand really at the tight end position, because right now they've had a couple of different guys in, but I think they're targeting really Nick Townsend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think they're targeting Nick Townsend. I think he's an elite athlete at the position. Again, you know, 6'3 and a half, 226 when he ran the 10.92 fully automatic time 100 at district meet. I mean, seeing him in person, he's going to be a 6'3 and a half, 6'4 guy, 245, 250 pounds running in the 4.5s. I mean, that's the level athlete we're talking about here. And a guy that's physical on defense too. You're not going to have to worry about him being physical as a blocker in the run game. It's just the technique and learning that more so. But his physicality is going to translate because he is a physical football player. When he hits you, the helmet comes off and the play's over on the highlight tape. So a very physical player that legitimately could play outside linebacker, edge rush position at a Texas A&M, at an Alabama level as well. He's going to announce in early July, and that's Alabama, Texas, A&M, USC. It's going to be one of those four for him. So that'll be interesting to see. But a huge visit weekend coming up for the Horns.
All right, guys. Well, Bobby, before we move on to the next subject, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about Austin Underground.
Yeah, since 2004, Austin Underground has specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider just too risky. Rick Vavro and his teams offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground.
And we want to thank them for sponsoring each and every Thursday right here on Coffee and Football. And you mentioned the Elite 11 earlier, Jerry, something that all Longhorn fans are kind of keeping an eye on as they have vested interest in it from KJ Lacy being in there. What have y'all seen, heard, whatever it may be from him, and what's your thoughts moving forward?
Yeah, I think KJ, he was ranked, well, for whatever it's worth. You know, I think Elite 11 is really good for the kids. It's a on-air quarterback competition. So I'm not as big on it as some people are in our industry, but I think it has its place. But he was ranked fourth after the first day. I think he was 16 of 20 on his pro day workout last night. So done very well in the classroom. I think that is the one thing that is his strength is in the classroom. He plays for a tremendous coach, Jeff Kelly at Saraland, a really good offensive coach, former Southern Miss star quarterback in the NFL and the CFL is his head coach at Saraland. And obviously works with QB Country, David Morris, who's worked with Arch Manning for years, actually worked with Eli Manning some when he was in the NFL as well. So, and then you have Steve Sarkisian, right? So KJ Lacy, a true student of the game. I think that's coming out, but great footwork, obviously working with Jeff Kelly, working with David Morris, QB Country down in Mobile for all the years he has. So it's not surprising to see his level of success out there. He's built for these type of competitions. And in my opinion, people are kind of, so, you know, look, one thing I'll say, for people that are like, what's his arm strength like? Sark recruits guys that can make all the throws. I mean, that's the one thing. He recruits guys that can make all the throws. So just remember that.
I mean, look, Arch Manning couldn't make all the throws, apparently. They knocked him down one notch.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have the strongest arm. I think he looks pretty good to me. So
Yeah.
I just don't worry. Hey, Jerry, I'm to the point on some of these camps and combines. I think it's interesting because you get a chance. It's really a first look, and you actually get to see who has the strongest arm, who has the best footwork, who understands the game the most. You really do get to see that. So I'm okay with it. But as a overall evaluation tool, I'm really down on it.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you miss the forest through the trees. You get so sidelined by looking at every single tree. You're not looking at the forest and what looks like on Saturday or Friday nights That's what I have a problem with. And it's the same thing with pro days at universities. I mean, Zach Wilson looked like a, you know, what did he make? $100 million off of a pro day and some tape. But certainly the pro day played a large role in it. I feel like that's where people are missing it. I don't worry about Steve Sarkisian and quarterbacks. I'm past that.
Right.
And I think other people probably should be too. I mean, look, Trey Owens wasn't supposed to be all that. He looks pretty good to me. Arch Manning looks pretty good to me. I think that the, you know, KJ Lacy looks very, very good. Led his team to a state championship. Dia Bell looks really, really good. I think worrying about Texas and quarterbacks, as long as Steve Sarkisian is the head coach, is not going to be a thing that needs to be talked about. Hey, I want to mention this and just go off in a little different subject this morning. Bert Orange Horn mentions SMU has a $159 million NIL war chest reportedly. That is inaccurate. What it is, they raised $159 million for their athletic department, not for NIL. There's a big difference between the two things. Basically, if you're unaware of this, SMU has chosen to forego all revenue from the ACC for the next 10 years to actually enter into another major college football conference. And so, therefore, they needed to make up funds through fundraising. And it was not about NIL at all. It was 100% trying to make sure that they were set to go into the ACC with enough money after foregoing all of that TV revenue. Had zero to do with NIL. Not that SMU is hurting for NIL, by the way, but that's where it's at.
Bobby, question. Do we think they're probably third in this state behind A&M and Texas and Texas A&M?
In NIL money spent? Yeah, probably. Right now, I think everybody has an opportunity to. I mean, TCU, Baylor has been late to the party, very late. Texas Tech has had something ongoing, but hasn't necessarily stepped out there like some people. I think that Texas, Texas A&M, and SMU are the three largest at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Baylor stepped up in basketball because they had to keep Drew from going to Kentucky. I think he kind of power played him, which was smart on his end. If not, go to Kentucky, right? I think SMU's probably third in that race right now. So it'll be interesting to see how they build in the ACC as we move closer and closer over the next few years to two power conferences.
Yeah, TCU clearly has some, but not enough. That's why Dominic Williams ends up at OU and leaves TCU. Texas Tech has some, but I don't think – I mean, I think that Tech is trying to do as much as they can, but they also realize where they live. You know what I mean? They're not going to it's what I go back to saying, Jerry. Everybody's – the color of everybody's money is the exact same. It's green. So are you going to be in Lubbock? You're going to be in Austin or Dallas, right? And for your long-term future and marketability, most people would say Austin or Dallas.
Yeah.
I'll just put it that way. And it has nothing to do with, you know, where is a better place to live or any of that other stuff. You know, it has to do with marketability.
Okay, guys. Well, The Athletic recently put off what they think could happen this year in the play in the first 12-team playoff. I'm going to put that up here. They have Ohio State at number one, Georgia at number two, Florida State at number three, and Utah at number four, all winning their conferences, getting that bye, followed by Texas at number five, Oregon six, Ole Miss seven, Notre Dame eight, Alabama nine, Penn State 10, Miami 11, and Memphis 12.
Memphis.
The first thing I notice with that is y'all can all call me out if I'm wrong, but FSU at three is
So here's the deal, Jerry. All the conference champions get a bye.
Right.
Okay. But do you think that I don't think Florida State's going to win the conference? Do you?
I think they're going to take a big drop off at quarterback. I think they do a good job in the portal. I think Norvell's proven that. I think they have a good plan in the portal. I think they're recruiting at a high enough level of a high school portal combined, but I just think they're going to have a big drop off at quarterback. And they have good defensive players back. They lost some real difference makers in the pass rush. I think Patrick Payton's very good. They lost some real difference makers in pass rush that they're going to have to make up. But I just think the quarterback, I don't see how. They're going to have to change up everything they do offensively. DJ has not been that level player to this point in his college career. If he was, he'd still be the starting quarterback at Clemson. Just something to remember.
Well, I'm going to say this. I think Florida State and Texas are very similarly situated last year. They have very similar seasons. The difference being that Texas is a little bit more ready to compete without those guys, in my opinion. And they did better in the portal than Florida State did this year as well. I just feel like, and then you mentioned the quarterback position. I feel like Clemson is going to be the team to beat in the ACC if it's not Miami with Cam Ward, the quarterback that transferred in from Washington State. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm not a believer in Florida State either. Texas at five is what's interesting because that means they're the first non-conference team in. That would put Texas likely at an 11-1 or 10-2 record. And I would also say, Jerry, if you notice, I don't see a Michigan in this category either. So of the teams Texas plays this year, there's really only one that would be in the college football playoff predictions, and that's Georgia.
Yeah, that would also mean Texas and Georgia what play in the SEC championship game in this model. So they play twice before the playoff,
or Texas plays once and loses to Georgia. Georgia goes undefeated, and then Alabama loses in the SEC championship to Georgia.
Yeah,
or Ole Miss, something like that. The point being, there's four SEC teams out of 12.
Right.
So if you finish in the top four, you finished in the top four in the SEC, you're likely going to the college football playoff.
Yep. I think that's going to be the norm as long as it's at 12.
Yep.
A couple of questions regarding this. Champ Bailey 3 says, hey, guys, just asking a question because I have no idea. Does an undefeated conference champion group of five team not even factor into the 12-team playoffs?
Oh, I think they could, and I think they should, most likely. I shouldn't just make a blanket statement, but I think that they will definitely – I think they're going to get at least one if they're undefeated in there, so they'll factor in. Now, are they ranked 12 like in that poll right there playing Texas, I guess, at the University of Memphis? I don't know, but my thought process is that they will definitely be involved. 2 years ago, I'll give you an example. Tulane, like them or not, was a top 12 team in the country. They ended the season a top 12 team in the country and would have been in a 12-team playoff, in my opinion. Now, they would have lost in the first or second round, but they deserve it. They deserved a spot. They were a better football team than, 80 or 90 other clubs out there. Good quarterback, good running game, good defense.
And then one other one from Mike D. He says, are you guys surprised to see Miami up there on that graphic?
I'm not. I mean, Jerry, I'm not because of Cam Ward and talent. Now, when are they going to get their mind right is the question in Miami. It's rarely been about talent there. In some ways, they've been like Texas the last 10 years, the previous 10 years for Texas. Because they've had talent in and out, but they haven't put it all together, and they've had very spotty QB play overall. Now, with Cam Ward, I think the spotty QB play should go away. So you remove one of those pieces, not unlike Texas has had with Quinn Ewers. You start removing those things and then allowing that talent to kind of bubble to the top. You start winning more games. And we'll see. I mean, Mario Cristobal has won conference championships at Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And so don't forget about that. It's not like he forgot how to coach. He may have forgotten how to take a knee, but he hasn't forgotten how to coach and build.
And we know he won't do that again after that game last year, Bobby. I know people said, well, he did it at Oregon. He won't do that again. No chance.
I know some coaches there are coaches out there that are so stubborn. I mean, they're more stubborn than a donkey.
If he does that, man, if he does that one more time, oof. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, more stubborn than a mule. I should have said a mule, but I mean, seriously.
So working man asks, has Cristobal learned the style? I mean, he's a Miami guy. He knows it. I mean, look, he's from a understanding Miami, recruiting the Miami. He's probably been the best hire that they could make. He is from Miami. There's a reason Saban brought him in at one point to be on his staff. I mean, he makes the right decisions on Saturdays, he's about as good of a coach for Miami as they can hire right now.
I completely agree with you. The question I have for you, Jerry, is he's playing in a faster conference as a head coach now than what he did out in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And it's ACC is a more talented conference than the Pac-12. Less quarterback heavy in the ACC. I'm interested to see if his brand of ball and how he won that those conference championships at Oregon actually translate to the ACC, where there's more athleticism on defense in particular. That's been one of his real bugaboos, in my opinion.
We got one other question regarding this. I'm going to put the graphic back up for this question. Phil wants to know, if you could be one or number five in that graphic, which would you want to be?
I'd rather be five, because I think you'd get to the quarterfinals there, the semifinals. I'll tell you who I'd really want to be is three. I mean, Oregon, I just don't know about Oregon this year, Miami, Florida State. Two ACC teams in the same quarter? That doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
If you're asking between one and five the questions, you always want the bye, right? I mean, you always want the bye. You want to be, if the question is, would you want to be one or two? I mean, that would be an interesting question there as far as what this looks like, this projected looks like. But you always want the bye. As long as there's a bye in the college football playoff, it's kind of like the NCAA tournament. You don't want to be in the round of 68 game. You want to be in
I will counter you to that. If you can get a team that you know you're going to beat, Jerry, and you feel like you will remain unscathed health-wise, I actually like keeping your timing down on offense, because sometimes in these bowl games we see it, teams come out flat and they don't have timing on offense or defense, and they look a little – they're not syncopated. You know, they're not in sync, and I feel like that's a problem. But I agree with you. Overall,
it can also come down to, we could be talking about a different subject how many months from now. How healthy are you? Does the bye week help your health? Or do you need it for certain position guys that have been out 2 or 3 weeks? That's the one thing you can't answer right now.
Sure. Okay, y'all. Before we move on here, I need to tell folks out there about our sponsor, N-Factor. And warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you can fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. Make today the day that you kickstart a new healthy routine. And what are you waiting for? With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you're going to always have new flavors to explore. You can absolutely crush your wellness goals this summer with dietitian approved meals and ingredients that you can trust. Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients. From breakfast to dessert, stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. Make your day delicious with help from the great folks at Factor. And here's the best part, guys. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. There's no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleaning up. It's that easy. So head on over to factormeals.com/Texas50. Use promo code Texas50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off next month. That's code Texas50 at factormeals.com/Texas50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. And we want to thank Factor for sponsoring.
Hey Blake, I want to hit something real quick so we can get this out, because it's been coming up a lot. that is Scott Knutson asked about the situation at USC, talking about the 2 5-star D linemen from the state of Georgia that decommitted. This question from Scott Knutson: can you speak to the current situation at USC? I'm not buying kids will be homesick and too far away from home. There's stuff that have to be in the within the program to drive these 5 stars away. Followed up with that, Mark Valdez: is Texas targeting either of the recent USC high-profile decommits? I know the DL recruit, Justice Terry, was formerly a UGA commit and is visiting campus this weekend. Texas is not in on those either one of those guys. Texas offered Isaiah Gibson way back, but he came out with 5 official visits earlier, late in the spring, and none of them was USC, by the way. He had 5 official visits, and USC was on the list. Both those guys are going to stay a little closer. As to why those guys decommitted, look, I don't think it's homesick. I think USC, that's all fine and dandy. You know, you get the kids out on campus. You can blow them away with that visit weekend in SoCal. But long term, it's what we talk about with Texas. I mean, these D-line guys who are the highly ranked guys in the Southeast are really tough to win in recruiting. You have to get a lot of shots on goal. And these kids from Georgia, with the power of Kirby Smart in Georgia right now and some of the SEC programs closer to home, USC was up against it. We kind of been saying on the show that those guys weren't going to stick for a while, and they weren't going to stick. They weren't going to end up at USC. So I just think that's a credit to USC for trying, but that was a pretty steep hill to climb for them on those guys.
Okay, before we get to questions here, one other thing that I want to touch on, guys, is that ESPN came out with their future power rankings. And I'm going to read this. As they say, that this is not a one-year projection, but they set out to predict the best in college football during the next 3 seasons, 24, 25, and 26. So they got Georgia number one. They have Ohio State number two, and then Texas number three, Alabama number four, and Michigan number five. What's your thoughts there with Texas being number three set up for the next 3 seasons?
Go ahead and play the Sam Ellinger. We're back. I don't know. But it's great company to be in, Bobby. Top four. When you look at it, and look, when you look at Texas, 3 straight top five recruiting classes, probably on their way to a 4th straight top five level recruiting class, have the power of blue blood in the portal. Guys are getting drafted, quarterback friendly, offensive friendly. The rules are made for offense nowadays in all sports. I think Texas is sitting in a great position, and now they have the power of the SEC behind the program as well. It's great company to be in, first of all. It's nice to be considered within that group once again.
Oh, they deserve it. Look, they've had three consecutive top five recruiting classes. They're doing extremely well in the portal. I mean, they are capitalizing on the portal, Jerry. They're one of the few that actually, like, I think they're doing better in the portal overall than Georgia or any of the other top five programs are right now. I really believe that. Now, some people will do better every so often, but right. Texas is killing the portal. And the thing that ESPN author wrote that I think is correct is he talked about a premium personnel outlook for the Longhorns and how Sarkisian is driving that. And I agree with him. I mean, that's the difference. If you're looking out 2 and 3 years ahead, you need to see what's in the cupboard, right? I mean, that's just the bottom line. And Texas has it. They've got it at quarterback. They've got it on the offensive line. I think they're going to have it on the defensive line, especially at edge. They're going to have it at wide receiver if they keep this up. Heather Denich, ESPN reporter, this is from Zane Petty, tweeted University of Texas and Georgia are the only two programs with their offense and defense ranked in the top five. Get excited about the game now. We'll see if Texas actually has a top five defense. All right. That's the question everybody has, I think, on this in this podcast at the very least, right? I mean, is Texas really going to have a top five defense? We'll see. I mean, we're hopeful, but I think that's a question mark. But my take on it, Jerry and Blake, is that Texas is really well positioned. They're going to have to keep recruiting the portal well. Yes, they're going to have to keep bringing in some superstar players that actually can make a dent as a true freshman. That they do that, they're going to be just fine and better than fine. They're going to be a great football team.
Some of the other teams of note, guys, Oklahoma, number 16 on their list. A&M, not in the top 25.
You know, I think A&M is going to be in the top 25. I'll say this. Look, they're set up to be competitive. And I know it's not popular on this YouTube, but they're going to put together a really good recruiting class in year one under Elko. They're going to be good on defense. You know, they're going to be in games because of Mike Elko on defense, I think, and they're set up from an NIL stand. You look at who's set up in college football to have success in the future. A&M is going to be a top. If they're not the top 25 program, that would be a shocker to me. They're too set up for success nowadays. They just got to have the right guys.
I think that they're going to have a 1 to 2 year lag, Jerry. That's my thought process, because I think if Wegman plays well, he's going to be gone potentially. They're going to have another quarterback, which I think they'll have a good quarterback. But a lot of these, they did not recruit exceedingly well the previous 2 years. And one of the years, as you know, they had a complete wipeout of a recruiting class after signing what was allegedly the best recruiting class of all time.
Yeah.
So my point being, I think they could be a little up and down. Almost to a degree what Mac Brown did at Texas, where first year he had a really good year, then he had two kind of mediocre years, and then he brought it back up a little bit. That's what Elko could do in a best case scenario, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the portal changes it a little bit if you make good decisions in the portal.
You got to make – they haven't done that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have some super chats that we need to get to, and let's just jump right into those. Jeff wants to know about Sark's wife, and thank you, Jeff, for the super chat here. But how does she play a role, or what role does she play with the recruits and their families?
I don't know that she has a specific role other than to be there on Saturday nights and hang out with the families. She's not, I wouldn't say she's uninvolved. She's always around the team and around whenever I go into the facility or whatever on a game weekend or whatever, she's always around. But I wouldn't say that she's like hyper involved in recruiting. That's not her role. I don't think Sark wants that to be the case. I think he wants his assistants to be the primaries. And so that's what happens there. It's not, and again, I'm comparing to Mac Brown, where Sally Brown was part of the pitch, to be honest. She was like, I'm going to make you cookies and we're all going to be kumbaya together, family, which worked, by the way. I'm not saying anything negative about that. It's just a different style approach, and it is very odd. It's not normal at most big-time schools to do that. I think L'Oreal is much more normal in that regard as it relates to the football team.
Hey, Blake,
she does pick out Sark's suits, by the way, Jerry.
Right. Yeah, he's not doing that. Hey, I have a couple I want to hit real quick here, Blake. Cameron Miller asked about this, and I posted a video of this on Texas Football. The Florida basketball freshman who's now – they listed 7'9 on the Florida basketball roster. What do I know about him? I walked by that guy at IMG, and I literally never seen anybody taller. I think he was 7'6 at the time. And I've sat down low at the Rockets games when Boban's there. But this kid, I mean, is he 7'9 or is he 7? I mean, what does it matter at that point? But if just go watch the videos of him, it's pretty funny how good of a player he is. Can his knees hold up? That's what'll be interesting. I'd love to ask somebody about that if we get a chance to in the next few minutes. Kelly Horn's up. Why did Elko not follow the Sark model of a rebuild? I think that's a great question, because Texas is winning. And Texas is moving to the SEC, and Oklahoma is showing signs of life under Brent Venables in year two. That puts pressure on the hire at A&M. And in today's day and age of the portal, I'm going to continue to harp on it. There's no reason for your coach at a power program to walk to the podium and say, we're an inexperienced team. There's just no excuse for it. Now, there's too much talent in the portal. You can rebuild faster. You can patch a lot of holes in the boat much quicker through the portal. And high school recruiting and player development is still very, very important. But when you take over these programs now, I mean, if I'm an A&M fan and Mike Elko walks to the podium and say, hey, we're a really inexperienced team this year, I'm like, we didn't hire the right guy. That should not be the answer. So I think it's just different times in college football. But I think Texas winning, I mean, look, the reason that Jimbo got whacked before the LSU game was A&M didn't want him to win the LSU game then have to keep it. They knew with Texas ascension that they had to make a move now.
Okay, before guys, before we move on here, and we have a special guest joining us here in just a moment, but Jerry, I'm going to let you tell folks out there.
We'll do that after.
Okay. We'll do that after. All right. Well, let's bring them in, Jerry. I'm going to let you do the introduction here while I bring him in.
Look, we have a special guest today. 47% three-point shooter in the NBA playoffs. And our first guest that ever was a 40% three-point shooter in the NBA for 5 years. I'm talking about Rajah Bell, but the father of Dia Bell. Rajah, thanks very much for joining the show this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
I've got to ask you, what's it like being now known as the father of Dia Bell as opposed to your own superstar former player situation, Rajah?
It's been an interesting transition. we started joking about it maybe a year ago. But honestly, it's been pretty cool. His mom and I both, had our own little playing careers and watching him kind of navigate his own and grow up through this whole process. I mean, it happened pretty quick. Last time we were even in Austin, he was kind of a real, real young guy, right? And over the last couple of years, the maturity and the growth has been pretty amazing. But that has been interesting for me, going from, hey, that's Dia's dad, to the other way around.
Hey, Rajah, he grew up playing basketball, obviously really good player, kind of shifted his focus to football. But what are the translatable traits as an athlete, as from a mindset, from basketball that helps him as a quarterback in your eyes?
Yeah, so I think interestingly, like basketball point guards, are used to distributing. And Dia came up in a program that I ran, and we were really, really competitive, played on the national scene. And his job, less than scoring and putting up a bunch of points, was just managing the show, making sure that it ran smoothly, making sure that my communication to the team was running through him when he was out there on the floor. And basically, taking care of all the moving parts. So I think that worked kind of seamlessly into his transition into playing quarterback. Like we saw that at an early age, he kind of was able to pick up new systems and really relay messages and kind of organize, in a way. I think basketball helped with that. And then functionally, I think, basketball players have a footwork that goes with that, that isn't great for every position on the football field, but specifically for quarterbacks and offensive linemen, like those sliding, those tight space kind of movements. I think all of that kind of translates for him.
I've got to ask you, we talk about, the different, we look at a lot of recruits on here. Jerry goes around the country evaluating players, et cetera. You've seen all levels, right? Growing up, going to high school, then college, and then pro. What are some of the things that you take away and you maybe try to impart on Dia that you see are the difference makers between guys that are just good athletes and then guys that actually can take it to that next level and be pro athletes? You know what I mean? It seems like the difference is just very small between the guys that make it and the guys that don't. What are some of those things and what are you trying to teach Dia and pass on to him maybe in that regard?
It's a really good question. I talk about it at length. There's no real right answer. I'd point to a handful of guys or more that were better than me from a skill standpoint. And there were just breaks that I caught and certain situations I was put in where I was able to maximize those. So, sometimes you don't really control that side of it. What you do control and what I talk to Dia and his brothers and sisters about is how you work, how you prepare, what you put into something as it relates to the expectation you think you're going to get out of it. The resiliency that it takes to be a high level athlete, like it's not always going to be your day. You're not always going to leave a practice or a game feeling like you were at your best. How you bounce back from that quite frankly, how you comport yourself while that's happening, right? Because you might not have your A game every game, but you still got to fight through that. You still got to figure out ways to put your teams in good positions and be whoever you're supposed to be for that team. Not taking no for an answer. If I did, I would have never gotten a chance to live out my dream. So, you know, there's got to be a little thick-headedness there and a little bit of stubbornness. Humility is important. I just think that no matter who you are, no matter what level of recruit you are or draftee, understanding, you know, that there are better guys out there, having a healthy bit of confidence, but just having a humility and a way about you that people want to be around, like having a little bit of stuff to you, I think is important. And then just generally speaking, man, like the cerebral part, like the physical is important, and that's what we work, you know, every day. And that's what 99% of people are working every day, but really understanding what you're trying to do. So, you know, you asked me about point guard play and basketball and how that relates to quarterback. Like, point guards have to have an in-depth understanding of the chessboard, how the pieces move. When they do this, we do that. When we do that, they're going to do this, so we'll do that. That part of playing his position specific to Dia, because my other kids aren't quarterbacks, but that's what we've been. He's been in virtual reality simulator since he was in the seventh grade. Like, we've been, you know, I didn't play it, but I listened to you guys and other guys talk about it. And that seems to be the separator, at least in my opinion.
Hey, Roger, we have some questions from some of the Texas fans. And one, Horn 7 has a great question. Is Dia still growing physically? I think he's pretty young for his class, actually. But where do you think he's at physically in his growth right now?
Yeah, so he's been in a pretty steady kind of growth cycle, I guess you would call it. Like, the last time we were out there, I think he was probably like 5'9". That was 2 years ago, maybe 155. He finished this football season at about 6'1 and a half, 180, 185. He's at like 6'2 and a quarter, 200 now. He had a little wrist soreness. So we took him in probably about a month ago. And the kind of surprise that I didn't expect is they said his growth plates were still open. So we were pretty excited about that. I honestly don't know how much he has left. But the fact that they are open and he's been growing pretty steadily, I mean, we're excited.
When did you see that quarterback could be his future? I mean, what were some of the signs for you with him, his love for football? Because obviously he grew up basketball with you, right? But when did you start to see the football thing happening with Dia?
Man, so look, Dia was – we were, when Dia was 3-4 years old, all he wanted were football helmets and footballs. and that's all he wanted. My dad was a really good receiver. He still holds records at Morehouse College. And, you know, he told me, like, just watching him throw it around, like, hey, looks like he's got a knack for it. And then we put him in the second grade, I think, to start kind of playing peewee. And we didn't request quarterback, but we just kind of let the coach throw him wherever he thought. So he played a defensive position and he played quarterback. They're not throwing the ball a lot, so we're just watching. But he had these organizational skills. He could communicate. He knew how to run a huddle. And they change offensive coordinators every year. And at about fifth grade, one of them came to me and said, hey, man, is he always this quick? Does he always pick the things up? Because this is a lot of stuff. Like, he knows what everybody's doing. And you look, as his dad, you want to keep a level head about who your kid is. There's a lot of dad goggles being worn, right? So, you know, we thought he was okay, and I thought he had some physical tools. Obviously, the mental tools started to show themselves. But I would say, honestly, when he got to American Heritage and they threw him kind of in real big boy practices in the eighth grade, really in the seventh grade, and he didn't play a lot. And their DBs were like a power five secondary. It was Damari Brown that's in Miami. It was a kid Slim that's at Missouri. There was another kid from NC State, Earl Little, is at Alabama. And I didn't go, but I'd come home and he'd show me his huddle and he was handling himself. Like, you know, it wasn't like he was shredding it every day, but it was at that point that I said, wow, like this isn't just me. Like there's a little something there. So if cultivated right, and if he loves it and keeps working at it and he's supported the right way, like, you might be able to do something with him. At what level, I don't know.
Right, Roger, we have another question from Texas fans. I think it's a great one. They wanted to ask you about Steve Sarkisian, your thoughts on Sark. What is it that you like about Steve Sarkisian? Because obviously you're putting a big check mark on this recruiting process for your son as well. What do you like about Sark and kind of his message in the recruitment of Dia?
Yeah, well – I mean, I thought Sark was a straight shooter. My wife and I really enjoyed our time, you know, hanging out with him. Dia and I enjoyed our time hanging out with him before that. You know, he spoke a lot about what it means to be a quarterback at University of Texas. That it's not for everybody. Some of the pluses and the pressures that come with that, and what he's looking for in a young man that he's going to entrust with that kind of responsibility. And so, I'm always looking for somebody that's not just telling me all the positives about this situation. Like, you got to be leery of that. But I love that he kind of balanced the two and was straightforward. He's got an easy way about him. You know, we kind of got lost in the conversation in his office a few times, which I appreciated. It's not just, you know, stale and kind of sterile business talk all the time. So, you know, it's somebody that you're going to leave your son with, and they got a real family atmosphere. Coach Milwee and the way he's been in contact with Dia and the relationship they've developed over the last year has been really incredible. And I tap in. I'm not the guy taking all Dia's phone calls for him or the one that wants to talk to a coach every night. Like, this is Dia's relationship with them. I don't get to go play quarterback. I get to sit in the stand. So he's got to develop it. But I do tap in to hear where he's at and to kind of keep a finger on the pulse of it. And their relationship was always great. And then obviously, you know, Sark's track record, where the program's at currently, you know, what he's doing with quarterbacks and has done in the past it's really exciting for us.
Raja, thank you so much for joining us. I would be remiss if I did not ask you one question about basketball here. What do you think of the current state of the NBA? I just want to know what you think and where you think it's headed right now.
Yeah, you're setting me up. You're setting me up.
I got to ask, man.
Hey, by the way, you can come back anytime and talk about anything with us, guys.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. No, look, the NBA is in a great place. It's certainly different than when I played. The same way our generation was different from the generation. I think as far as skill level, as far as guys that can – actually get down, get a bucket, put the ball in their hand. There's so many more of those guys on rosters now than there were when I played. So it's fun to watch. I would prefer, you know, more physicality in the game. I think some of the calls and some of the whistles that have put in place to kind of get scoring up, like take a little bit of the fun out of it from my side of the ball. But I understand why they do it. I think the league's in a really healthy place. It was fun to watch.
That's good stuff, man. Thank you so much for joining us, Roger. We really appreciate it. And congratulations to your family with Dia's commitment. Yeah, there we go. Welcome awards. Appreciate it, Roger. You have a good week, okay, man?
All right, guys.
Bye. Thank you so much. Y'all have a good one. All right, that's Roger Bell. Jerry, thanks for setting that up. Tremendous dad. You can tell he's proud of his son, but wants to be realistic about it at the same time, so he has a healthy outlook. I really think that's one of the things about being an elite athlete. You want to make sure you're right. You know, you don't want to go over your handlebars about your son or whoever. And he's seen it and knows it. You know, some of those things he was talking about, you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
You know, how do you react when you're down as a leader? You know, organizational skills, things like that, you know. Ultimately, that's going to matter not only in life, but certainly at quarterback at the University of Texas.
And Dia may not have understood this until he's gotten to be a little bit older. And by the way, the younger son is a really good basketball player. I've watched some stuff on Rajah's Instagram of him. He's coming up. He's going to be a really good basketball player as well. I think he's in seventh or eighth grade. I think he's a little taller than Dia was at that age. I think he may already be like 6'2", 6'3". But What Dia's probably starting to realize now, he knew his dad was an NBA basketball player. But as you grow a little bit and you kind of get to search out your dad's story, undrafted, out of FIU, not highly recruited, right? Began his career at Boston University, transferred to FIU, had to truly grind it out to have an NBA career. Had to understand the role I had to play to have a successful NBA career. And he spoke to that a little bit. Man, what a great place for Dia to be as a son of Rajah Bell. His mom was also a star soccer player at FIU, so I'm not a shock he has really good feet, right? But to his, when you get older and you search out your dad's story, and then you can kind of reference that and ask your dad and have those conversations, and you guys just heard Rajah talk. Is there better? I mean, Dia's in a great spot to take great advice moving forward.
Good stuff, guys, for sure. Well, let's tell folks out there about the good folks at Manscaped, Jerry Hamilton.
Well, yeah, we got to do that. I wanted to wait until after the interview for this one. But look, it is smooth sack summer, baby. Smooth sack summer. Ladies plus gentlemen, it's my pleasure to announce that smooth sack summer is officially upon us. When you're playing in that summer sun, make sure you're groomed from pubes to bum. Thanks to our friends at Manscaped, you can make this season your smoothest yet. The Performance Package 5.0 Ultra is the ultimate bundle to keep your boys downstairs cool while looking hot. Join the 10 million men plus worldwide and growing fast who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Get 20% off plus free shipping when you go to manscaped.com and use code ONTEXAS, all caps. Summertime and the trimming is made easy. The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. And everything also includes, after you have that perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. Introducing the Crop Smooth Soother, the aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafing ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back.
Oh, man. Good stuff.
I didn't want to read that before Rajah's interview. Sorry,
Blake. I was going to say, you'd have him laughing on the way in.
Yeah.
You'd have him laughing on the way in. Hey, good stuff today. Jerry, let's talk a little bit about where we think those three players are that are on campus right now.
Yeah.
And where they are in their recruitment with the University of Texas. Because we talked a little bit about the outs of the show, but I want to give you the three names and you tell me where you think Texas has a shot, whether or not they have a legit shot, you know, 75%, 25%, 50%. I'm going to start with Dorian Brew, a cornerback out of Conroe, and where you think Texas stands right now in recruiting.
I think 25%, 30%, 33% in that area. We'll see after this visit. We'll see after Ohio State visit. We'll see what happens. But I think Texas, look, getting him on campus, I can't go higher than that until you really get some true returns after this weekend's Ohio State visit, because they struggled to get him on campus when they wanted to. There's no doubt about that. There's been some reporting out there that, oh, Texas preferred a midweek. No, they didn't. That's why they had him originally scheduled for the 7th through 9th. That's why they tried to get him in the 14th through 16th. Sark prefers the weekend official visits. Arguing, trying to report otherwise is just not factually correct. I'm not trying to be mean, but let's just look at Sark's history here. So I think we have to see what the returns are. I think Texas will do a great job in that recruitment. I think they'll give themselves a chance in the recruitment. But I'm going to wait to see kind of where this thing's looking like after the Ohio State visit this weekend, after all he comes off all the visit highs, because it's been LSU. It's been USC, it's been Oregon, it's Texas, and then it's Ohio State. And not many guys take five visits better than that around the country. So there's visit highs continuously through this month. So we'll see where that stands after the Ohio State visit.
All right, next one is Dijon Lee, the young man out of Mission Viejo, California, cornerback.
He's announcing June 28th. He could be one of the quicker guys to announce in this cycle that's visited Texas. Texas knew they were working from behind on this. Texas wasn't in their top four. This is where I give a lot of credit to Johnny Nansen, guys. I mean, you look at that. You look at Madden Faramo coming in this weekend. You look at Josiah Sharma. Johnny Nansen get Texas in the door on Josiah Sharma. So you don't want to underestimate some relationships Johnny Nansen has around some of these recruitments. But I do think coming into this visit, Texas knew they were working from behind. So, you know, you put that one at 20, 25% and see if Texas just knocks it out of the park. He's visiting Alabama after this. He was at Georgia. He's visited A&M. It looks like it's headed to the SEC, unless he visits all the SEC schools and decides to stay out west. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So how far does Texas have to come to actually overtake Georgia and Alabama is the question with one visit left.
All right, Nathan Tillman, young man out of Mansfield, Timberview, who Texas got on a little late, had committed to SMU. But you know what? Upon further inspection, 6'1", 180 pounds and ran a 10.7 100 meter. Blake Gideon, I think, may have found a diamond in the rough. How's that recruitment stand right now? Even with a commitment to SMU on the blocks, he's in Austin right now as we speak.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, if Texas makes that big final push, I think it'll be hard for him to say no, but he's going to go visit TCU after this as well. He's been to Utah, who does a great track record of evaluating defensive players in Texas, by the way, for those that may wonder about Utah that doesn't know Utah's history. They have done a great job on this kind of those earlier underrated prospects in Texas or under-recruited prospects. I think I'd put it at 60% for Texas.
Good stuff. All right. And then we have 18 guys coming in as well, Jerry, this weekend, 17, 18, depending on whether or not a couple of guys make it that are expected to make it at this point in time. We've talked about it mostly. All three of those guys we just talked about were defensive backs. Now we think there's more defensive backs coming. Cade Phillips, Aiden Anding also coming in this weekend. Your thoughts overall on Texas right now and what this weekend means, not just from defensive backs, but overall perspective that you're going to be looking for, because you're headed up there right after this video is finished. You're going to go get ready for the big weekend. So what's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. So wide receiver, obviously Jamie French. You get the last official visit with French, which I do think is meaningful. It's going to be a ways until he makes his decision. If he sticks to that late August, August 30th timeline, we'll see. We'll see if he moves that around or out. But set, right now, it's set for August 30th, which is some time. But you know, look, he's coming off obviously LSU, Miami, Tennessee visit to Texas, and I've always been told that Tennessee might end up being the real competition for Texas there. But I think the key there is, after this weekend, his mom's still big on Texas, like she was when I was through there after that April visit. I really think that's a key here in this one. And I think the offense in Kalik Lockett, I think Kalik Lockett, I've said all along, I didn't think, you know, rankings wise, DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, and Kalik Lockett, I just wasn't buying the fact that all three of those guys would go to the same school. I think A&M and I think Florida State, he's at Bama. Reminds me, that's funny. He actually reminds me a little bit of Jalen Polk as far as the skill set goes. So that when DeBoer started really going after him, I kind of thought that fit. I think that Texas is, I'm not sure they could get all three of those guys. I'll say that. And I've been wrong before, but we'll see on that. So I think that's big for Jamie French this week. I think Nick Townsend's a huge recruitment for Texas. I think he's been the top tight end for these guys for a while, and he should be. And there just aren't many guys that are that big, run that fast, that have ball skills, that are also that physical and good on defense. So, you know, we always wonder with tight ends, you know, is this guy going to be able to block? Is he going to be an inline guy? We wonder JT Sanders. You wonder with Nyblack. With this guy, his physicality on defense, yeah, I mean, he's a legitimate top 100 player in the country as an edge rush guy, if he wanted to do that. So I think it's a huge weekend there with Nick Townsend. D-line, another huge weekend, Zion Williams. Because if he didn't go to Texas, he's going to LSU, and he's an LSU lean. We'll see on DJ Sanders. He's more of a down-the-line developmental guy. I think Madden Foraimo is interesting at linebacker because Notre Dame has a big lead. But, again, Johnny Nansen, getting these guys on campus. Can you be the competition? Can you pull the upset over Notre Dame for one of the best linebackers in the country? He'll be on campus with Elijah Barnes, who is also one of the top linebackers in the country. Then, you know, you get sick DB. Cade Phillips is so interesting to me because Corey Raymond's hard-selling corner. Cade Phillips likes to hear corner. Is that his best position long-term? We'll see. But I think it's more safety long-term for him. But Texas LSU is where that decision's going to come from. Aiden Anning's Texas Miami, and he's bringing a bunch of family members down. Devin Williams, total wild card. But a huge visit weekend coming off the last one. I think we'll see Texas at, you know, start to pick up a lot of commitments in July here. A lot of these guys are announced. I actually have some a little news off of last week's visitors. I spoke with John Mills again yesterday. His family left. He's actually stayed. His mom and dad left for vacation in Europe for a couple of weeks. He's not going to announce a decision until after July 4th.
Interesting. Good stuff. Well, guys, we got some super chats that we need to get to, and I'm going to start with this one here from Jack. Thank you, Jack, as always. He says, do you think Nansen can help with the improvement of our defensive back play? It seems to me as a former defensive coordinator that he should be able to make a huge difference.
I think they're going to run different fronts, that could help the secondary. He did not put together the secondary at Arizona, though. That was Dwayne. That was the, not only Dwayne Aquina, but the DB coach that then moved on to Washington. I think that his help will actually be getting more pass rush from a variety of angles. That's going to be his piece of the puzzle, so to speak. The secondary is going to be reliant upon the guys in the room, Blake Gideon, Pete Kwiatkowski, as well as Terry Joseph. That's just, you're asking him to do more than maybe what he's assigned to do. That's not what he's there for. He's there to probably get stop the run and get pressure on the quarterback.
And our next Super Chat, fellas, comes from UT Boy, and this was going back to the NIL conversation earlier. Thank you, UT Boy, by the way. He says, UT's money may be a tad bit more green, Bobby. Hook on.
When well, you're there winning, may be more of it. It's, the stacks may be higher. Yeah. I'll agree with that, but it's the same color.
And then the next Super Chat, fellas, comes from Antonio Harris. He says, as a huge Trey Owens fan, I don't think that he's going out without a fight. How will Texas hold on to all these QBs?
Patience is the key in development. I would say this. We just listened to Rajah Bell. Obviously, he knows about development. Think about his development to become an NBA basketball player and a successful one for 12 years, and a career 40% three-point shooter. That takes a lot of work and a lot of development. I think he understands. I think the interesting thing is, for me, it with quarterbacks is, look, I get it. You want to get on the field. You want to play as fast as possible. And I know the Manning family financially is in a different spot than a lot of people. But if you can't look at how the Mannings have handled Arch and how Archie handled Peyton, who was probably going to redshirt except for an injury in game one at Tennessee, Bobby, and Eli did redshirt at Ole Miss. If people can't just take a step back as a dad of a quarterback and look, say, you know, maybe these guys really know what they're talking about here as far as development, and I shouldn't try to rush my son, and I should talk to my son about not rushing this process. I think patience and development is very key. It's a tough offensive system to pick up. You're not going to come in and do it right away. It's going to take you time. But that development, if the guys that Sark recruits and quarterbacks out there, period, if they just kind of look at the man and say, you know, maybe there's a method to the madness here. I know they're in a different spot financially, but there's a method to the madness. And have a little patience. This is a very difficult position to play. And it's really difficult at 18 years old in the Big Ten or SEC.
And before we get to our last Super Chat, Bobby, can you tell folks out there about the good folks at BKCW? Or I'm sorry, Austin Underground. My apologies.
You know I can. Like Rick Vavro is one of our favorites. He owns and runs Austin Underground. Since 2004, Austin Underground is specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider too risky. Rick and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground. I also want to mention, Rick also owns a company called Texas Road. If you're looking for any big projects, overground and creating roads, whether it's for a subdivision or for a large piece of property like a ranch, give Rick and his team a call at Texas Road. Thanks, Rick.
I guess I'm thinking it's Friday. I'm getting ahead of myself a little
bit. You're wanting to get to your son's next baseball tournament, Blake.
Today at Baylor. So going to be heading there here shortly. But all right, guys, we got another super chat here, and it's from Jay Lee. He's wanting to know about 24/7. They have a 100% prediction up for Jamie French to Ohio State. Do you think there's a good reason for that?
No, so I think there's a few things that play into all that with the predictions. Is one, you know, if you make a prediction, and obviously the recruitment changes just from being in that part of it for years, the last thing you want to do is change it, keep changing it, right? So you leave it out there until it gets closer to the decision time where you're maybe more comfortable with where your next pick would be or prediction for that. And again, I talk about that because that's how all this stuff changes when everybody brings up all the predictions. is, you know, look, was it 3 months ago that French looked like he was going to Ohio State? And I think the people that were picking that were not wrong in their prediction at the time, but things change. So the last thing you want to do is make two or three changes. So I think people, once they make early predictions, they kind of chill for a while and then wait until the dust starts to settle. And then the other piece of that is, look, a lot of these, there, you know, a lot of these predictions, I mean, that's a business strategy too, to grow companies. So I'm not going to be, not be real about that. What does it do? It garners interest. They can always
ask, hey, Jerry, have we heard anything at all? I mean, talking about these receivers, have we heard anything more on Michael Terry lately? A young man out of San Antonio, Alamo Heights, visited A&M this past week, has visited Texas, looking at Nebraska. He's done all his visits. So in his timeline pretty soon here?
That's a great question, Bobby, because I've been told twice in the last couple weeks that he could be a fall decision. Now, I take that with what I just said, like with a grain of salt, because these things change. These timelines can change. But he seems like that's one that hasn't, that's not in a rush to make a decision. And that may be smart, because you got to see kind of, if you're being recruited as an athlete and Nebraska's telling you wide receiver and Texas saying athlete, man, we'll figure it out when we get here. A&M's somewhat similar in that. You need to see where the dust settles. I mean, it's some of these positions there's Michael Terry headed out to Oregon. That'll be two visits, by the way, to Oregon, which is interesting. So if you follow the visits, but I think that may end up being too far based on people I've talked to. But I think he's, you know, you sit back a little bit and you kind of wait and you see who starts committing at various positions. Because if you're an athlete, that's a little bit of a different recruitment. He wants a chance to play wide receiver. But let's see. Let's see after he goes back to Oregon this weekend where things stand. I was told that probably ends up being too far, but he's taking a second visit out there. So we shall see. But Nebraska in the picture, Texas A&M both did a really good job on their visits. And obviously we know he liked Texas a lot growing up. That's the closest to home. It's not like A&M's not close to home. But I think it's going to be interesting to see where kind of things shake out, where guys commit at certain positions, how that it could impact how Michael Terry and his circle kind of look at each school.
The last question for today, and it's from King Me, and he wants to know, which SEC football stadium is the loudest, and where do you think DKR stacks up amongst those SEC stadiums?
I think it's either A&M or LSU or Florida for the loudest. I didn't think Alabama was particularly loud, by the way. I would say both LSU and A&M are definitely louder. I went to a Florida State game back in the 90s. Jerry, it was louder than Alabama as well, but I don't know that Florida gets that loud every single game. LSU pretty much gets loud every single game. Yeah. You know, A&M, it depends whether or not their team's winning that year.
I will say this. I think Auburn's the most underrated in that term. But again, it also depends on who's playing where at times too. But I think Auburn's probably the most underrated stadium in the SEC. But I agree with Bobby.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Valbro and Austin Underground. We want to thank them, along with Manscaped and Factor, for sponsoring today's show. Thank you all for tuning in, for the great questions, the super chats. Be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com to join in on the discussion there. You can use promo code OTFOG. You get 1 year for $39.95. You can't beat that deal. Jerry, I know you'll be posting recruiting updates.
We ought to have our weekend visit live thread. I started this morning so we could get rocking and rolling.
Yeah, we can't be on here all the time. So head on over to ontechfootball.com. Get those updates from Jerry, CJ, Bobby. A lot of good stuff over there. A lot of great discussion as well. And if you haven't, be sure to hit that like and subscribe button. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime we do post a video or go live. And for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks again to Raja Bell, too, guys.